Burrow's furniture is built for the way you live. From ensuring easy assembly and disassembly to honoring highly requested new colors for their award-winning seating, they always have their customers in mind. Their modular seating is made out of durable materials to last and grow with you. And with Burrow, you always get fast, free shipping. Get up to 60% off during Burrow's Memorial Day sale at burrow.com/ACAST. That's burrow.com/ACAST. burrow.com/ACAST.
Hey, Dave.
Yeah, Randy.
Since we founded Bombas, we've always said our socks, underwear, and T-shirts are super soft. Any new ideas?
Maybe sublimely soft.
Or disgustingly cozy.
Wait, what?
I got it. Bombas. Absurdly comfortable essentials for yourself.
And for those facing homelessness.
Because one purchased equals one donated.
Wow, did we just write an ad?
Yes.
Bombas. Big comfort for everyone. Go to bombas.com/ACAST and use code ACAST for 20% off your first purchase.
Need new glasses or want a fresh new style? Warby Parker has you covered. Glasses start at just $95, including anti-reflective, scratch-resistant prescription lenses that block 100% of UV rays. Every frame's designed in-house with a huge selection of styles for every face shape. And with Warby Parker's free home try-on program, you can order 5 pairs to try at home for free. Shipping is free both ways, too. Go to warbyparker.com/covered to try 5 pairs of frames at home for free. warbyparker.com/covered.
In the UK, 60% of the increase in food inflation has come from climate change. Supposedly, the Bank of England's is supposed to be tackling inflation for us, and they use monetary policy like interest rate hikes to tackle it. But if it's going to stay sticky up here because of things like climate change or impacting food prices, for example, then how does someone like the central bank tackle that? I discovered this thing with one set of growers who were doing regenerative agriculture, and they were achieving higher yields. But these growers were sticking carbon in the ground. And I was like, well, this is what the markets want. This is what everyone wants. Why don't we do this?
I'm Richard Delavan.
And I'm Claire Brady.
Welcome to Wicked Problems. We're delighted to be joined by Anthony Yousefian.
Anthony is a nature tech investor and longtime player on the climate tech scene here in the UK. We're so happy he could join us. He was in Dubai for COP, and we were just chatting yesterday about this incredible report from the ECIU talking about the components of food price inflation. So if you're wondering why your food bills are not going down, even though energy prices went down, that's why. Anthony, welcome to the show.
Hello. Thanks very much. Looking forward to discussing with you.
Great. Listen, first, maybe just to introduce yourself a little bit to the listeners, many of them would have already come across you and heard of you, but particularly those who might be coming, tuning in from other parts of the world, maybe give us a little bit about your background.
I don't think I'm that famous, Richard, but I appreciate you.
Everyone loves the hat. Everyone loves the hat. You're like,
I know. I wear the hat. Yeah, I used to be very famous for just constantly wearing a flat cap, but it's disappeared. I need some new ones for 2024. Anyway, yeah. Hi. Look, big background about myself. I started off in finance. I knew I wanted to make money. And on that, in that area of finance, I started to see a trend. There was a trend happening where money was flowing out of, let's just say, energy and fossil fuel positions and into alternative energy, solar, anything else. So money was decarbonizing. And I thought that was very interesting and was very much involved in a global environmental fund at an early stage. And it was very popular. So this is the start of an ESG wave. I then went on from being on the pension and buy side, moving on to an investment banking side, some say the dark side of finance, but working for a Chinese investment bank. But there, so here was another massive capital allocator looking to invest in things their area. So this is this kind of big trend that was happening I've seen in finance, but we struggled with the businesses I was working with, the asset managers I was working with. We struggled with trying to find companies to invest into who were truly having a positive impact. And what I mean by that is that we couldn't quantify their ESG. And I thought the technology has been there and has always been there. We just haven't been putting it in the right places. So I started to, let's just say, put a bit of my own personal money to work into startups. But I learned hard how hard it is. It's the romance of, yeah, invest in a startup and it becomes a unicorn. But that's not the truth. It's very hard and you lose a lot of money. But I've enjoyed every single minute of it. But I enjoyed it so much that I threw myself in the deep end to join one of these startups and fell into ag tech and was a company quantifying the environment inside greenhouses and trying to optimize food production, mm-hmm. trying to, you know, increase feed the world. And it was there that I realized that farmers were still financially struggling despite increasing their yields. The incentives were not well aligned. But I discovered this thing with one set of growers who were doing regenerative agriculture, mm-hmm. and they were achieving higher yields, higher nutritional quality or quality of the product. But this was in the cannabis and pharmaceutical sector, to be absolutely clear. Mm-hmm. And they were incentivized to grow that way. Let's be clear, because they were incentivized to grow for nutritional density. Right. But these growers were sticking carbon in the ground. And I was like, well, this is what the markets want. This is what everyone wants. Why don't we do this thing? But there was just no incentive. There's no incentive for right. modern industrial agriculture to grow this way. But this part of the market did.
Right.
So I thought, could I build something in, say, apple growing or any kind of growing? Because I set up my own business called BX with a family farm here in the UK, the Bardsley family, who very graciously gave capital to get this idea off the ground. Mm. And there we're trying to quantify carbon in the soil. Could we quantify the carbon in the soil for this, how the grower is growing? And then if we can quantify that, they can then get paid for it,
right.
carbon credits, or the supply chain paid for it. And it was on that journey that I was learned again the lack of the data points that were existing for us to prove that was true. So then, yeah, stepped away from it a year ago, but on that journey was still frustrated by the lack of capital
right.
allocating correctly in this market. So I've ended up at the First 30, which is a venture capital fund investing in early stage technologies like this that is trying to allocate capital into soil right. and regenerate it.
Right.
Sorry, long-winded introduction, but I wanted to give you the full story to how I went from finance to soil.
No, I think it's fascinating. And I think it's something that it's the kind of journey that a lot of people, when you look at climate tech and how it's different from clean tech 1.0, right? When, I mean, we do talk an awful lot about energy on this program, which mm-hmm. Claire is, I'm sure, getting a little bit annoyed by. But I think your story is a perfect example of the kind of thing that is happening more and more often. And I think that it brings home about the impacts of climate, you know, across the broadest sense, the entire economy. And so that's something that when we were chatting yesterday, we were looking at this report from ECIU about the impact of climate change on food prices and how that's not something that people have been talking about. And I think you were making a comment that we need some quantitative easing for soil. maybe tell us a little bit about that report that you were, again, posting about. And hasn't this really come up on the radar more than it has to date?
Yeah, so the point I made, the post I was making was, it was a really good report, as you mentioned. And you should probably drop a link in your notes to that report. But it was claiming that last year, certainly in the UK, 60% of the increase in food inflation at the household level has come from climate change, you know, disruptions in supply chain attributed to climate change. And the point I was making was like, well, supposedly the Bank of England's is supposed to be tackling inflation for us, and they use monetary policy like interest rate hikes to tackle it. But if it's going to stay sticky up here because of things like climate change or impacting food prices, for example, then how does someone like the central bank tackle that? And so will they suddenly become very interested into allocating capital or trying to push capital into the right places at the very least? Normally, its tool is to reduce money supply.
Right.
Slow things down, but it could invoke a crash in the economy, right? Because it's trying to remove money out, but it's not going to impact the inflation number because of things like weather disasters are reducing crop yields, for example, and disrupting supply chains. We're generally seeing a decline in, there's so much evidence showing in many parts, mm-hmm. we've reached peak yield,
right.
and you're seeing this curve like flatten out. We can't get this marginal increase in yield anymore.
Because I think for people, again, who are used to thinking of themselves in the kind of the comfortable first world OECD country, they're used to hearing about, for example, the conversations around regenerative ag, or they hear about climate adaptation, and they may go, oh, that's interesting. And like, oh, the economists say £1 spent in adaptation funding is £7 of future economic activity that's saved as a result of doing that. And like, that's all very interesting, but it's probably nothing to do with me. But when you start realizing it's connected and will be connected for the rest of our lives to the cost of living, suddenly that changes things.
totally agree, and I think that's what we need to do. I think for so long, it's certainly for me, it's been like it feels like it's the right thing to do. Focus on climate change, but how does it impact me personally? And I've the business case for tackling for climate capital has always been missing, or sustainability. And I think if you can tie it to human pocket or health. Mm. And that's one area that we see as a pathway to, let's just say, decarbonization of the food system, or a pathway to transformation of the food system, is what's in it for me. So human health. So just on some numbers that you mentioned there, like I believe we spend like, let's just say, 10p in the pound on our food system, on our food. And we're worried about food prices, but we're spending three times the amount on our healthcare service. And yet food is one of the biggest demand drivers to healthcare. What I mean by that is chronic disease is the number one killer on the planet. And chronic diseases, from cancers, diabetes, things like this, are driven from food.
Right.
And it's killing us. So if we're spending over here, why don't you start spending more on food that is preventative, that is good for you? And usually, what I'll go back to it is that if you to achieve highly nutrient dense food that is nutrient dense for you, I'm not just saying just fresh food. A lot of the fresh food is not nutrient dense because it's been grown in a medium which is it is not in soil or bad soils, which are not even soils, they're just dirt, dust.
Right.
There's chemicals going into them, right? When you actually source food from regenerative, healthy source, incredibly nutrient dense and high in vitamins and antioxidants. And it's those that we need to be eating. And when you start eating those, you're healthier, more productive. And so there's a value capture there, opportunity. So this is why food for me is, I'm so excited about it. It's like, it solves for human health, climate, and overall planetary and economic prosperity as well. So it just, climate capital should be shoveling this way towards food. That's why I've been buoyed by COP, right, at the very least, because fossil fuels has been in, let's just, don't talk about fossil fuels. Food has risen up the agenda. And I think people are starting to realize, actually, I can have some serious impact by actually tackling the food system.
Well, that's funny that you should say that, because we were just thinking it's been the year that food really hit COP in a way that it just hasn't before. I think possibly COP27, there was some starting and very early sort of attempts to do that, and it started to really gather. So it'd be really interesting to hear about your experience at COP. What was your motivation for going there? What have you sort of felt has come out of that, and potentially what might be the impact going forward?
One of the main honest reasons for going there was actually started back earlier in the year, being part of an initiative by EIT Food, which is EIT Food, to be clear, is the innovation agency or organization of the EU, which will try and implement a lot of the EU policy. And one of them is obviously in the EU is soil, it's healthy soils. And so they will fund initiatives and innovators to get that going, create communities. And some of the leaders there at EIT Food have been essentially frustrated by the lack of action in the kind of transformation of the food system, or they try and front run this kind of policy change. So we came together, I think it was New York Climate Tech Week, try to pull together several players within the food system. I say players, stakeholders, banks, end brands, traders, farmers. It was a real kind of mix. And it was like, could we come together and just, can we create an alliance to just act? And this is a kind of a no BS meeting of, we're not here to define what this is. How do we act? How do we remove the barriers? And it was a really good meeting. And one of the key things there was to take agriculture out of the narrative, because when we talk about regenerative agriculture, it puts the focus and the onus to transition the food system onto the farmer. And many people might not know this, but the economics of when you buy a piece of food is pennies in the pound go to the end farmer, who is the one who can actually truly regenerate soils and regenerate the nature, can we say, or farm in a different way. So we need to incentivize them. At the moment, we've incentivized them to extract. It's not their fault. It's right. The way the system's designed.
I mean, just on that point, I just to jump in, I think I remember when I was a business editor covering this with Tesco, was actually putting such pressure on farmers that they wound up actually having to pay
to sell their own carrots through Tesco. So the incentives are, yeah, to your point, it's not an easy business at any time, but certainly the system that we have has made it a lot harder.
Yeah, exactly. Totally agree. And this is a whole topic, and it's never, you need one of these Lex Fridman podcasts, I think, but you need to go 4 hours on this topic. Anyway, I love it. So going back to that, yeah, that meeting, what came out of it was like, this is a food systems problem. This is not a regenerative agriculture problem. This is a food system. So altogether, but also, as we just said there, Richard, is there's not enough money or value in the food system. So the real competitor is not with ourselves, not with supermarkets to farmers. That's not, we haven't got to, of course, we've got to be better, more equitable pay there. But the value of the food system is too low. We're not valuing food properly or nature high enough and the value that it brings. So our real competitor is with other sectors. It was like this agreement in this alliance was like, we need to capture value from other sectors who are taking more of the consumer pocket right now. If we can get people paying or citizens paying more for food because of the value it brings, and then governments and regulation will allocate capital, central banks, as we said, should start driving capital and investment towards this area because it can have huge positive impact. So that was a kind of the first meeting, which was great. And we're trying to snowball that. And then this was like another meetup at COP of those players. And we had more people participating, which was great. We had like MasterCard turned up, Fujitsu turned up, Google in this kind of discussion. People are really from all different areas are turning up going, I really want to be part of this conversation. I can help. How do we accelerate this? So that was actually the main reason for doing that at COP. And it just, as you mentioned, COP really, it was the year of food and it was a good place to do it.
So just sort of springing off from that, so what would you say is the plan for the next sort of 12 months in terms of this idea of food systems? It's such a complex thing. As soon as you try to solve something at a systemic level, it's almost so complicated that it's like, well, what do you do first? So is there a sense that from that next meeting that you've got a bit of a roadmap of what you're wanting to do, or are you still trying to figure that out?
Yeah, this is not going to be solved very, very quickly, but this is definitely a grouping and an alliance of people who want to do and act. So it'll be like not to talk, not too much talking, but let's come together in a communication of how we would act. So there's already like a data and technology working group trying to knock down the barriers of allowing all these parties to communicate and work together. For example, data standards, incentives. These are some of the things that people have frictional, why they won't share between each other. So these are some of the things coming out. But ultimately, look, you made a great point. It is incredibly complex, and this is why we probably don't see capital allocating well in this area sometimes. This is why some of the work I'm doing for the fund, the First 30, is investing in the companies that are generating the primary data on all of those systems upstream, right at the soil level. What I mean by those systems is below ground, in the soil, there are multiple systems. In a teaspoon of soil, there's more life than there are is humans on the planet. That hopefully will blow some people's minds away. So we don't even understand that. So we're investing in technology companies that are quantifying that, quantifying the fungus, quantifying the bacteria, the soil health, the water. And if we can start understanding how that's changing, elementally, ultimately real time, we can then start creating the intelligence of when those two communities work together, they're better. And then it's also the things above ground. So it's the management of the farm, it's the animals grazing, it is the inputs we put in, it's the plants themselves, the weather. They're all systems. They all need data feeds. But the good news is today, which is the hot topic of the year, right, is AI is at our fingertips now. Before, I haven't had this. In the 7 or 8 years I've been trying to do ag tech, like this has probably been holding it back a little bit. It's like we're excited by the data, but we can't plug it into anything. We now literally have really lowered the barrier on AI. So we can handle this complexity now. So we're really seeing already a massive first for these data streams. So we're investing in those early stage companies, generating those data streams, also the companies that are creating the intelligence. And then you can start having these solutions. So I'm talking about it. The food system really needs to act. This is what everyone is saying. I want to transform, right, but I don't know how to do it. And that's why we're
And even the name of the fund, right? So TFT, so the first 30, just to be really clear, that's the first, like the 6 inches of topsoil of, that make up the...
metricsness is imperial. But yeah, exactly. The first 30 centimeters, everyone talks about the topsoil is the most important part. It's where all the life and all the decomposition and life comes from. Right. So that's why we're focusing on that.
And there was a film that actually we got, I don't know if it was premiered at COP, but I think that you posted about that as well, called, I don't know, again, so again, forgive the imperial measurement, but yeah, that's probably why it was on the brain. I saw the trailer, but I didn't actually, obviously I wasn't in Dubai, so I didn't see the film. Did you catch it yourself?
Yeah, no, we've been supporters of it. We're one of the partners of, it's a film of three emerging regenerative farmers in UK who are trying to implement this. It's a really good film, and it's been funded on literally a shoestring. I can't kid you, like it's been crowdfunded by so many people. But I think it's great, and we need more content like this. One, it explains the importance of soil. Two, it shows how hard farming really is, but how much value adding it can be and how exciting it can be. And it's an emerging area which more people are trying to get into. So I think it does a lot. And so that's coming out next year. And I think it's going to be shown in, let's say, pockets of small showings. But I think they're hoping to have it on your Netflixes soon and stuff. But there is some great content on there as well, like Kiss the Ground. If you haven't seen that on Netflix, I recommend it. Or The Biggest Little Farm. Watch those two films. Watch 6 Inches of Soil. And if you're not convinced, message me. And I'll send you some more science and evidence and data, because it's the only way out of this problem is regenerative food systems and farming.
And I think, well, hopefully, I know that they're open to having some screening. So I will maybe hit you up for a contact there about trying to organize a Wicked Problems screening of 6 Inches. So that'd be great. Yeah. So in terms of COP28 itself, so you went there, you were there for the one day. Before I ask you the actual serious question, I just have to ask, like, first of all, are you a COP newbie? Was this your first?
There's never been a faster or easier way to start your weight loss journey than with PlushCare. PlushCare accepts most insurance plans and gives you online access to board-certified physicians who can prescribe FDA-approved weight loss medications like Wegovy and Zepbound for those who qualify. Take charge of your health and speak with a board-certified physician about a weight loss plan that's right for you. Get started today at PlushCare.com/weightloss. That's PlushCare.com/weightloss. PlushCare.com/weightloss.
Burrow's furniture is built for the way you live. From ensuring easy assembly and disassembly to honoring highly requested new colors for their award-winning seating, they always have their customers in mind. Their modular seating is made out of durable materials to last and grow with you. And with Burrow, you always get fast, free shipping. Get up to 60% off during Burrow's Memorial Day sale at Burrow.com/ACAST. That's Burrow.com/ACAST. Burrow.com/ACAST.
Time, and what was your impressions of the fact that it's a half carnival, half trade show, half lobby fest, half Davos type stuff versus the actual negotiation? So what was it like being on the ground?
Yeah, no, not my first one. I look at it from a perspective of, where else can you get together all these nations in one area and just at least have a conversation and at least get, we've at least been able to get these fossil fuel nations to put this wording in transition, but it's not the phase down, but it's last time we struggled to get coal kind of, and then now we have a whole fossil fuels. Now we have food right at the top. I don't think there's a better meetup. It is the coming of parties, right? And the biodiversity one now, which is obviously important. So no, I do look at it as like, as much as we can get frustrated about it, but it's good that we get frustrated about it. We can make it better next time. We can talk about it openly and discuss it. It's when we don't talk about it is the problem. So I don't believe in abstaining and not turning up to these things because it's a fossil fuel nation and stuff like that. We have to be at the table talking and trying to negotiate about it. This cancel culture and everything else does not work and will not work. So we have to have open, honest discussions and listen to everyone's opinion, because they do have some points, like us as developed nations have got to this point. We've polluted the planet and damaged everything and set it up our way. These emerging nations are still getting there. There's people, a lot of people in poverty, and they don't care. In the end, I go back to, if you're looking after your children and yourself, you just got to survive. I don't care that someone over here is hurting. You always, human nature is going to look after oneself. So we have to be empathetic to that. So no, look, I think it's a good thing. I'm positive about it. I'm taking some positives on it. We just got to keep the momentum up and keep the noise going. So yes, it was a bit of a, I wouldn't look at it. I didn't think it was any different to Glasgow personally. Like obviously Dubai does it in a different way, but there's a trade show when I went to Dubai, to Glasgow as well.
Slightly better weather.
This time I went in it from a different angle. Before I was a startup.
Right.
I was coming at it from an investor perspective. But yeah.
So what did you think of the Emirates declaration that came out, the 130 countries that did pledge certain principles about regenerative ag and the food system in general? In, I don't know if you've had a chance to look at the final text in terms of what came out for, as part of the COP agreement, but what was your impression? Was it everything you were hoping for? Or was it the things that you'd be looking forward to things progressing in Baku, of all places, next year?
Is it because at least that all got organized? I couldn't believe that when I didn't click that we didn't actually have a location sorted for.
I mean, I don't personally mind going to Baku. I might go there, but Bonn felt like it was going to be a little bit of an easier trip here from the UK. But anyway, but in terms of the text itself, in terms of what got decided, were you know, as somebody who looks at this very carefully, do you think that the final text was living up to what the promise looked like the week before?
Again, I think that's more of a, I think the anger was towards the energy side, but from my side, there was the word regenerative was actually in that text for me, which is significant. It's on the adaptation side as well. There was a call to financing farmers, and it's at the numbers are small, but it's a first step. There's an acceptance, and then there was links to climate and nutrition. Again, these are all kind of big firsts. So I think stepping stone, of course, I would love more. But like as you said, I just mentioned just then some content for people to get up to speed on this. So there's a big education process still to go on for everyone.
Right.
I think we're all learning. I don't know anything. I'm still every day I learn so much in this space, and hence we're trying to create those data feeds. So look, I'm looking at it. It was a positive text, but we'll see how it lands. We'll see what happens. It's all about the action anyway. I don't expect massive groundswell changes, but hopefully it creates momentum.
Something you said earlier about AI and how actually now with AI in play, you may be more at a cusp of being able to capture this data and use it in a really interesting way. So a few weeks ago, LinkedIn did this thing of like the top trends for 2024 for sustainability. And so I responded to that and I picked nature tech as one of my five top trends that I felt was going to go. Yeah, exactly. And interestingly enough, which sort of feels like this is a very sort of opportune moment, someone jumped onto the comments and they actually said soil. They were like, soil is going to be big. You need to get into soil. And I was like, that's really interesting. I don't know enough about it. I actually need to learn more. So obviously, I'm now going to be going away and watching all these films. But I think for me, I think it just is sort of hearing perhaps just expand that little bit about the role of AI and what that might enable the sector to do. Because I think it's really important, as you say, that if you can't get the data, then it's very difficult to get the capital to flow against. Whether we like it or not, we need to understand the impact. We need to somehow quantify that. So just be interesting to hear your thoughts on that.
Yeah, no, sure. So the reasons why we're not acting or not doing anything is because we don't have the information to. So an argument at the moment is like, what do I do to transform, for example, my farm? What practices do I need to do? Do I plant? What cover crops? What animals do I need to integrate back in? What plants to plant? And we haven't codified, should we say, that knowledge base anyway, because the knowledge is built up on just previous experiences of the farmer and everything else. And we don't actually know what activity is actually going on. So, that's incredibly complex. There's so many different things that can change. Like you need a real, real-time feed of the weather changing. You can say I did exactly the same as last year and everything else, but how much rain did it happen? What species and insects went through that at that point in time? There's so many different variables that kind of change. And previously, getting all those data feeds has always been very expensive. But you can plug those data. The data feeds have previously been expensive, but they're now, you've got Earth observation. There's so many different ways to gather this data. But it's much cheaper now. The most important thing I would say on this point is if we look back to the first computer versus what the power we have today. It's not AI, but AI exists because of the bandwidth we have. I think I'm going to misquote this now, but it's on my LinkedIn page. I made a post on it, but it's something like 12 trillion of increase of bandwidth. Some sort of 20 quintillion increase in memory and processing power since the first computer. So we can handle now nature's complexity. All these different systems are changing real time as we speak. They're always adapting. We've got to understand how they're moving and changing. And so this is right. If you're looking for a use case for AI, it's not booking my holiday and everything else, or some sort of application around that for ChatGPT. It's plugging it in and understanding how nature is changing and how we can coexist with it and work with it and regenerate it. Because I can tell you now, there's research shows that this planet is in decline, but this planet had much larger holding capacity. It's not that there's too many humans. It's not because there's too many cows. I can point you towards research that this planet had much larger holding capacity of things, animals and us, like megafauna, large animals. They eat lots of material, right? And so the more species, it's quite clear evidence, the more species on this planet, the larger the animals, the more carbon holding capacity this planet can do. We've just declined all of these things. And so, yes, it doesn't have the holding capacity of us at the moment. So this will unearth as you plug in these data feeds from all these different things that are changing real time. And so I think even Elon, so some people have negative things to him or positive, whatever, however you may look at him, he is developing a new AI company right now, right? And I think his mission is to let me understand the universe, understand the why we are here. He's saying the same thing. He's saying, I'm going to use AI for positive good to understand how this all works and works together, because it's 4 billion years of R&D has been going on. And we've only been on it for a very tiny bit of spec. And we've turned up thinking that we know how to work with it. There's so much to learn. So sorry, long-winded answer. But the point being, I hope it's landed, is there's an exciting amount. There's so much complexity and so much we don't understand. Mm. But there's so many answers there as well, which we can. So again, I'm very positive and excited about applying AI and plugging in those data feeds to understand it better. Oh, apologies, dog barking and ring doorbell going off. Right. Modern day society.
Do you need to check on something, or are you okay?
Ring doorbell. So dogs become conditioned, Christ, isn't it, to react to ring doorbell activity.
Okay. It's all good. I'm not sure. My dog seemed to have disappeared for the moment, so I'm not unhappy about that for this particular second. But anyway, so Anthony, in terms of TFT, then, I mean, one of the things that I think investors have looked at nature tech or the food system in general, and haven't, for the same reasons that farming itself isn't always is hard. People who, farmers who I know and through the work, can find it incredibly difficult, incredibly challenging economically. So why is it bankable? Why is it investable? Is the fact that you have these data streams coming down in cost that you can do more with it? I guess, where do you guys see the opportunity for returns on investment?
Yeah. The best performing asset class, best way to explain this, probably in the last 30, 40 years, I think, probably 50 years, is outperformed stocks, it's outperformed bonds. And also I think it's very similar to stocks on an absolute basis, but in terms of volatility, if you just put money into land, you would have made the same amount as on stocks. But in that, you had lost a credible volatility with stocks, for example. So something going on there. But soil, land that we can use that has not been destroyed, we desertified it essentially from climate change and how we've managed it, there's 500 million hectares now of it now, but is in decline. I think we're losing something like 23 million hectares a year of land that we can farm on and utilize. So again, you've got an asset which is in decline. So it's increases scarcity. It's going to go up in value, right? So again, it's not a bad place to be investing into. Now, what will start to happen is the market will start to recognize that it's you want land that it can produce food, can produce biomass. And it's there is lots of evidence out there that GDP is under, well, nature underpins majority of GDP. So if nature's in decline, the quotes, some of the quotes is like FAO quotes, like 50% of GDP is reliant on nature. So we, as you mentioned, right, that food prices are increasing because of climate change. So it's nature's in decline, right? That's the ultimate reason. So other asset classes and other parts of the economy will have price increases. Fashion, property will have issues, right? Because you can't get hold of the biomass because nature's in decline, for example. So these things, you're going to start seeing that kind of come through. So that's why we are trying to help farmers or landowners or land managers or stewards of the land, mm-hmm. show them how to regenerate it, because if they can regenerate it, they're going to become the most valuable asset managers on the planet, right?
Interesting.
They're going to be the new Black Rocks. They're going to be the new hedge funds who'll be driving around in Lamborghinis. That's what we hope.
I like it. And I mean, and I suppose the companies that you work with, I mean, at TFT, we had Jim Mann from Undo on the show, yes. as one of our early guests. And I suppose it's there's a lot of interest in that part of the space. But what other kinds of firms, not necessarily wanting you to give away anything that there might be term sheets out there, but in terms of kinds of companies that they're, I guess if you want to call them portcos or just in your network or things that are popping up for you as being interesting in the coming months?
Yeah, no. So give an example. So yeah, we've supported Jim in our previous syndication of investors. But in the fund, like, for giving an example, I don't think we can announce it just yet, but it's a nutrient density measurement company. They're measuring nutrient density of food. So if you can quantify that this apple is 10 times more nutritious than that one, if the brand starts advertising my apples are better than their apples, they can start capturing the healthcare opportunity, right. Capture more of the wallet. So then that's more money into the food system. And then they will start sourcing for more healthy soils and incentivizing farmers to do healthy soils, for example. That's one example. Another example is a regenerative grazing company called Rumi. They are helping farmers move to regenerative grazing, which is basically biomimicking nature. When herds of animals used to roam the plains, they would eat the grass or eat the vegetation and move on. Obviously, we keep them in one area. And what they do is use earth observation and sensor technology to know exactly when to move on the livestock. And when the animal nibbles grass, it actually makes the plant panic and grow faster. So you get more carbon sequestration, more food for the animal at the optimizer. And then you don't damage the area, you actually invigorate biodiversity is what happens. So it's a great little free app, actually, which farmers should use here in the UK, for example, called Rumi. And so, yeah, they are helping farmers transition. That's a perfect solution that we would invest into, but they're gathering primary data. We've invested in weather companies and soil health companies and soil measurement companies are right in our sweet spot.
Right. No, and it's something that it's absolutely fascinating. We could go on for ages, but you've been very generous yes. with your time, Anthony. It's fascinating. We'll obviously put that in the show notes to check out. The other portcos and people in the network that you guys have worked with, all fascinating group of companies that I wouldn't have put together in one basket if I hadn't seen it through this lens. So that's really interesting. Look, that's fantastic. I suppose we do ask everybody who comes on the show, Anthony, to give some recommendations, catalysts of things that have influenced your kind of point of view. And it could be books, could be films. What have you got for listeners? What recommendations do you have?
Well, I think I've done it. I love content like that. I do have lots of books that are piled up on my side on my desk, which I don't get the time to read, I don't think. But I mentioned, I would point listeners to go watch those films. Kiss the Ground, Biggest Little Farm, on the kind of content side. 6 Inches of Soil is coming out. But then 2 podcasts have had a big influence on me was when I discovered soil health's potential. John Kempf was a podcast which is all about implementing regenerative agriculture and how hard it is, and just interviewing those people and everyone in the industry. And then a gentleman called Koen Van Sagen, who does a podcast called Investing in Regenerative Agriculture. Ugh, amazing content there from all different types of people, again, in the food industry, up and down. And everyone on there generally loves soil. So these two have fed me with so much knowledge and then spurred me to look at so many papers and everything else. So I think I would point towards these things that are very easily to digest, those pieces of content, than a book. If you want one book, What Your Food Ate, have a look at that. What Your Food Ate. What we eat, right? It's supposed to say you are what you eat. What about what your food ate? In other words, what's your food getting from the soil? These chemicals, these things. And funny, if it's eating this stuff, it's coming out quite bad, actually, if you measure it. It's not looking good. I'll give you just as an example before on that, like cows, livestock, which we eat, we feed them with grain, right? We've been feeding them very much there. And those things are omega-6 rich. Omega-6 is quite inflammatory to us. It's good for us, but it's also, but we need to balance it with omega-3. And so a lot of our diets are omega-6 rich. So very inflammation. So go back to the point about chronic disease.
Right.
Our bodies are inflamed a lot. So we're probably triggering these issues, these chronic diseases, where if an animal has been eating from pasture, regenerative graze, biodiverse areas, they are balanced. They're omega-3 rich, but more balanced. And you don't get the illnesses, basically, because so again, check what your food is eating.
Right.
Is an important. So the book's called What Your Food Ate by David M. Montgomery and Anna Bika, I think her name is. But yeah, that's a good book.
Well, Anthony, I think like a good place to leave it. And I suppose the ultimate pitch for you guys is land. They're not making any more of it. In fact, we have less of it now, it sounds like. So thank you again for coming on the show, Anthony and Claire. Always a pleasure.
Thank you. I loved it. And we could talk much longer. And I'd love to do it again, over a pint maybe.
And that condition continues the tradition of Richard making plans to go drinking with people. But also, thank you so much.
Oh, right.
Yeah, if you listen to some of the other earlier episodes, he's got drinks lined up in all manner of cities across Northern Europe. But no, thank you so much, because as I said, this is sort of inadvertently ticked that box, which was to go and learn a lot more about soil. So I sort of feel like good. I've got my work cut out, a couple of good films to go and watch. So thank you.
And let's definitely have that pint, and also we can figure out offline, we can figure out how to get a Wicked Problem screening of 6 inches of soil sometime in the new year.
100%.
All right. Thanks.
Brilliant.
Take care.
Cheers, Claire.
Thanks for listening to Wicked Problems. And if you like this conversation, please share it and leave us a rating and review on Apple Podcasts or Spotify. It really helps people find the show. You can subscribe to our newsletter at news.wickedproblems.uk, where you could also find more episodes with Richard Elvin and Claire Brady, and all our show notes. And consider becoming a paid subscriber to help support our work. You can also find us wherever you get your podcasts. For now, thanks for listening.
I'm a little bit worse for wear from having gone to a comedy event last night and then having met someone before that, and there was some wine that was consumed. So, I'm a little bit raspy today, more than usual.
Hi, I'm Daniel, founder of Pretty Litter. Cats and cat owners deserve better than any old-fashioned litter. That's why I teamed up with scientists and veterinarians to create Pretty Litter. Its innovative crystal formula has superior odor control and weighs up to 80% less than clay litter. Pretty Litter even monitors health by changing colors to help detect early signs of potential illness. It's the world's smartest kitty litter.
Go to prettylitter.com and use code ACAST for 20% off your first order and a free cat toy. Terms and conditions apply. See site for details.
Need new glasses or want a fresh new style? Warby Parker has you covered. Glasses start at just $95, including anti-reflective, scratch-resistant prescription lenses that block 100% of UV rays. Every frame's designed in-house with a huge selection of styles for every face shape. And with Warby Parker's free home try-on program, you can order 5 pairs to try at home for free. Shipping is free both ways, too. Go to warbyparker.com/covered to try 5 pairs of frames at home for free. warbyparker.com/covered.